This is one in a series of podcasts produced by the Department of Classics at the University of Cincinnati. In these podcasts, you'll be hearing faculty and graduate students discussing aspects of Greek and Roman culture as they relate to the university, the Classics Department, and the city of Cincinnati. Each podcast will highlight a different aspect of the city and the various ways in which its history and life relate it to the ancient Mediterranean world.
Cincinnati is a city of many epithets, including the Queen City, the Natty, and Porkopolis. To scholars of UC's world-famous Department of Classics, perhaps the most meaningful name is City of Seven Hills. Locals debate which of Cincinnati's many hills constitute the true seven, but whatever the group, such a title can't help but evoke another sloping city far more ancient, Rome. Sitting here in downtown Cincinnati's Fountain Square, it's clear that the connections between these two cities extend beyond mere geography. Joining me in considering this tie is classicist Michael Hanel. Thanks for being here, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Mike, I want to start by asking you about names. The original settlement founded here in 1788 wasn't named Cincinnati at all, but Lysanteville. Why the change to Cincinnati, and how does this relate to Rome?
Okay, so the story actually begins with an old Roman legend recorded by the historian Livy. Now, back when the Roman Republic had just been founded, a farmer named Cincinnatus, who lived during the 400s BC, was summoned to Rome as dictator to lead the city's struggle against the neighboring tribes. Cincinnatus defeated the tribes and saved Rome. But instead of holding on to that power, he gave it all back to the Roman Republic and returned to being a farmer. Now, fast forward a little to the Revolutionary War in this country. George Washington and his comrades loved this story and the lesson it taught about sacrifice and humility. They founded a club based on these principles called the Society of the Cincinnati. In 1790, the governor of the Northwest Territory and the current president of the society, Arthur St. Clair, changed the name of the settlement of Lysanteville to Cincinnati.
Oh, and this is the heritage that Cincinnati honors with artwork across the city, right? I'm thinking especially of the large statue of Cincinnatus, or Cincinnatus as they pronounce it around here, you know, the one down by Sawyer Point along the river. He's got the axe and bundle of sticks in one hand, the fasces, symbolizing his power at Rome, while his other hand rests on a plow.
Yes, exactly. And don't forget about the Kroger mural at Vine and Central Parkway, just a few blocks north of Fountain Square here. The background is that great Roman temple, the Pantheon, with Cincinnatus standing in the middle of a grand double staircase.
All right, so both the statue and the mural harken to a past relationship between Rome and Cincinnati, but there's also a more modern connection between the cities, right? What can you tell us about the wolf statue?
Well, the statue is actually the second of two given to Cincinnati by the modern city of Rome in 1931 for a Sons of Italy convention. Both were copied from an original statue in Rome, which portrays the legend of Romulus and Remus, the twins who were raised by a she-wolf. Romulus, of course, would grow up to found the city of Rome in 753 BC.
Well, we hinted a bit at the hilly terrain, but both Rome and Cincinnati are cities dominated by their rivers.
Certainly. And you have to remember that for Cincinnati and Rome, the conditions of their foundations were quite comparable. In earlier times, you needed hills for defensive reasons, and you needed rivers for quick transport of goods and people, sort of like today's highways. Setting up Rome next to the Tiber River and Cincinnati along the Ohio River helped these cities to flourish into the urban gems they were and are today.
Now let's explore that a bit. When I think of a city, I think of what we have in downtown Cincinnati. From our vantage point here in Fountain Square, I see tall buildings, I see heavy traffic, I see people milling about, and it's the real center of activity, right? We have government, commerce, entertainment, religious activities, and people living down here. How does this relate to what ancient Rome had?
In their basic elements, all cities are going to be quite similar. See, they all require fundamental institutions to maintain a large group of people living together in one space. So, like Cincinnati, Rome also had a Fountain Square-like downtown region called the Forum Romanum, or Roman Forum. Around it were centered the main institutions and buildings of the city.
Give us a few examples.
Well, for instance, the Senate gathered in the Curia, while other magistrates met in the Basilica.
Basilica, like a church.
Actually, for the Roman time period, a basilica was a place used for banking and law cases. So think more of a mixture between the PNC Bank building and the Hamilton County Courthouse. This is, of course, only the tip of the iceberg. With a population of around 1 million people, ancient Rome had a multitude of magistrates to keep the city running smoothly.
1 million. I know Cincinnati has a metropolitan area of about 2 million people, and in either case, that's an awful lot of people to take care of. So let's think practicalities. I'm looking at the fountain here and wondering what sort of waterworks and sewage system was in place in Rome. The Greater Cincinnati Waterworks pumps about 136 million gallons of water daily through about 3,000 miles of city water pipes. Now, surely Rome needed something similar for 1 million people.
Oh, well, of course. It began with Rome's 11 aqueducts, channeling around 300 million gallons of water into the city. This then was collected in cisterns, then distributed by pipes into individual houses or public distribution points, such as, well, fountains. And then, of course, the Romans also had a number of sewers to take away the used water in its various states of cleanliness.
Okay. So the water system certainly has its similarities, but I don't suppose the ancient Romans had a garbage service. I mean, a lot of people equals a lot of garbage.
Well, on the one hand, there were magistrates called aediles in Rome who had to remove trash from streets a few times a year. Rome really didn't have our modern system of garbage collection, though. And that's actually a helpful thing for archaeologists who are trying to piece together the life of the ancient Roman. You see, you can tell a lot about a group of people based upon what they throw away. You don't believe me? Well, look, there are a few dumpsters over there. Why don't you go look around?
I think I will pass. Let's move on to commerce. Right in this area, we have Procter & Gamble, the Kroger Company, Macy's, and quite a few other corporations. We're also surrounded by a number of smaller shops and other businesses. Can we imagine a similar economic setup for Rome?
Well, minus the huge corporation buildings, Rome did have a diverse business environment of local, regional, and international trade, small shops, large outdoor markets, and even enclosed malls like those around the Forum of Trajan in the heart of the city. You have to really envision the goods exchanged here, that they were as varied as the people doing business.
Well, that certainly sounds an awful lot like Cincinnati's Findlay Market, just north of here. You've got both indoor merchants, outdoor stalls, with anything from fresh produce and bread to clothing and even artwork on sale.
Exactly.
Okay, so say you've made your money through business. Where do you let loose? In Cincinnati, we have a whole host of entertainment options, from football in Paul Brown Stadium and horse racing at River Downs, symphony performances at Music Hall, or plays at the Ensemble Theater. Did the city of Rome have this kind of array of venues?
Absolutely. The crowds probably roared just as loud at the games in the Colosseum or the chariot races around the Circus Maximus. And for those more culturally inclined, the city had a number of theaters for musical and dramatic performances. For instance, there was the Theater of Marcellus, built by Augustus for his nephew, which some scholars estimate could have seated over 10,000 people.
10,000? Well, you know, that's about what our own U.S. Bank Arena holds. So clearly, city folk then, like now, love to be entertained. But beyond government, commerce, entertainment, surely there are many other points of overlap between city life then and now.
Without a doubt. We could look at the expression of religion then and now, the diversity in housing and living arrangements, the burial of the dead. The list goes on and on. I would argue that we can find these patterns in civic life, because what people need when they all live together and how they express their needs really hasn't changed that much. And at the same time, we shouldn't lose sight of the uniqueness of both Rome and Cincinnati. I like to think that the Romans would have been pleased by how the legacy of their city and citizens like Cincinnatus has been carried on by our own community.
Oh, I do hope so. Well, and with that sentiment, our time has come to an end. Our thanks to classicist Michael Hanel for joining us. Till next time, this is Christina Neumann, live from Fountain Square in downtown Cincinnati. Wale and goodbye.
This concludes the podcast, but you can find others in this series at our website, classics.uc.edu/podcasts, or look us up on iTunes and leave a review on our Facebook page, facebook.com/uc.classics.outreach. To learn more about our outreach program of public lectures, email outreach@classics.uc.edu. These podcasts have been made possible by the support of a Society Outreach grant from the Archaeological Institute of America. For more information, you can visit their website, archaeological.org.